Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
One of the absolute best in the business. Dennis, how have you been?
I am good, Steve. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for asking. Great column you wrote on the transfer quarterback, because last year when Penn State played Michigan, we're doing the pregame show, and somebody asked about the use of two quarterbacks, McCarthy and McNamara. Now, it turned out in the game they didn't play McCarthy. And I made the comment, I said, look, I'm not there. I said, my guess is they're trying to keep McCarthy from transferring. I said, that's just from 30,000 feet. You wrote about the same thing. I mean, how difficult now is it for people to manage in this culture of transfers?
Well, it's an embarrassment of riches when you've got two good quarterbacks like a Michigan, like Ryan Day continually has had at Ohio State. It requires some deft manipulation in that the Michigan situation is one, frankly, I've never seen before. You've got a team captain. I don't think a quarterback has ever been a team captain under Harbaugh. He led the team to the Big Ten title and a playoff berth, threw for whatever it is, 383 yards against Michigan State. Is not good enough. And I think at every school, the next guy up is always the most desired. But J.J. McCarthy is the five-star. He's the better-rated quarterback. You got hints of him last year. Harbaugh did go out of his way to give him a series of snaps every game. And he really directed the battle this year, and then he extended it into the season. And Penn had each quarterback start a game, and he made a decision for this week against UConn to meet J.J. McCarthy. It hints at, you know, what a ruthless and bottom line situation it is in college as it is in the NFL. Because now, if you're Cade McNamara, what do you do?
Right.
You know, I think he's got to transfer. It just becomes a question of when.
No, I agree with you. 48% of FBS starting quarterbacks are transfers, which is a remarkable
number.
Well,
in the last 20 years, which is, you know, since the beginning of the century, I did 20 years, that's 100 players, five each year from 24/7. 46%, almost half, is transferred. In 2016, every one of them transferred. The top five ended up transferring. That ended up being everybody from Shea Patterson, from Ole Miss to Michigan, to Malik Henry, who is really now an afterthought at Florida State. He ends up being a centerpiece on Last Chance U. And since 18, Steve, since the transfer portal was instituted, half of those quarterbacks have transferred.
Yeah. I mean, Penn State's going to play Auburn, for example. Finley, LSU. Ashford, Oregon. Calzada,
yep.
Texas A&M. That's their quarterback room. Which is interesting.
Yeah.
This will be a week where Nebraska plays Oklahoma. No Scott Frost. Look, you wrote the column, this was the slam dunk hire. Why didn't it work?
I don't know if I know the answer, because I was one of those in 5 years ago, hook, line, and sinker. I had covered Scott Frost when he won a national championship back in the 90s. He knew the culture. I don't have to tell you he was a perfect fit. He'd gone 13-0 at UCF in his prep job. I don't know. It suggests that it's a bigger job there than people thought, and I think it is a bigger job. If for no other reason, remember this, Steve, figure this out. I think everybody's forgotten the Big Ten, along with the other conferences, are going to go to one division now to match the two best teams in the for playoff purposes, you know, to get the two best teams ready for the playoff. Okay.
Right.
Nebraska goes from, well, you know, can we get good enough to go to a bowl? Then can we beat Iowa? Then can we beat Wisconsin and maybe win the division? Then we're playing for the title. To now, the next guy, year after year, the standard is getting into the top two to play for the Big Ten title. Guess who the top two are? Hasn't changed since Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler was there. Michigan and Ohio State. Nebraska is nowhere near those programs.
And that's going to be a big problem for a fan base that expects, you know, and forgets that they're a state of 1.8 million people. I mean, they don't have a natural recruiting area.
they don't, and they lost their way when they left the Big 12 for the Big 10. I'm not saying they should be back in the Big 12 because the money's the money.
Right.
But it had – Nebraska had recruiting ground. They went to California. They went to New Jersey. They went to Texas. The Big 12 opened up Texas. Huge.
Yep.
For Nebraska. Missouri, too. They suffered from that when they went to the SEC. And so now you can't answer that question. Where do they recruit? Well, they don't have a natural recruiting ground. They change coaches so much in philosophy, they don't really have it. So they lost their way in that they're now just this Western outpost in a league that's centered in Chicago and New York. They're going to be, whatever this means, they're the closest team to USC and UCLA, 1,500 miles.
Yeah.
Not exactly a travel partner, but it goes beyond recruiting and bowl games and coaches. They've lost their way. There's no, who's Nebraska's rival? They don't have one.
Right.
They've got a contrived one with Iowa.
Yeah.
It's like sold to a sponsor, you know, whatever. But there's no there.
So now here's, you and I have talked before about the financial separation between the SEC and the Big Ten. Compared to everybody else, might we see down the road ACC, Big 12, Pac-10 coaches now leaving if they are offered a chance at the two big conferences to go there because the money might be more?
I don't think the disparity is going to be enough to say
okay. That
the division line is between those two conferences. I just saw something today. Okay, we know the name for Nebraska right now. Kleiman from Kansas State. Matt Campbell from Iowa State. There's Lance Leopold from Kansas. Is this the first indicator through realignment that these Big 12 teams aren't going to be able to compete? In other words, you know, Nebraska is a better job than Kansas. Is it a better job than Iowa State? You've been there? You know, I don't know. Can Iowa State match what a Nebraska would be able to offer? And if not, what does that say about their ability to hire in the future? Because the Big 12 is, I don't know if people know this, is taking a giant haircut no matter what happens.
That's right.
The media rights, right?
That's right.
So is this the first indicator?
That's a good, and again, that's a great point because they are going to take a giant haircut. And we've talked about that on the show. People think, oh, they opened up the new TV, you know, negotiation. They're going to get more, they're not going to get more money. Pac-12 is not going to get more money. I mean, and the ACC is stuck through 2036 with what they're doing. The way they can get more money is through the college football playoff. ESPN does have exclusive rights to it until the new one comes up. So what are the hurdles, Dennis, to making this happen in 24 and 25 as opposed to starting in 26?
Mostly logistical sites. Hotel rooms. It's already been published report that if they went early to 24 or 25, that the ESPN is contracted to pay $450 million more a year in those 1 or 2 years. So that's done, according to reports.
Okay.
I guess I reported that.
Right.
The other stuff is complicated. I was able to find out that the CFP commissioners have copies of the dates of the 25 and 26, I believe, playoffs. Those aren't even available. Those haven't been released to the public.
Right.
You can kind of do it yourself if you backdate stuff, like I did for my story. But there's all kinds of complications. Beginning in early December, NFL teams play Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Right.
Well, when are you going to play some of these games? You've got the issue of trying to sell 16 games again, which the commissioners thought they had done last June when they presented, but it looks even more daunting now with revenue sharing and collective bargaining on the horizon. That's another one, revenue distribution. I think eventually the players are going to have to get a piece. Don't ask me how.
Right.
I can offer opinions, but I think we all know they're going to get a piece when it's worth, at a minimum per year, $1.5 billion.
And that was going to be my next question about revenue distribution to the players. Kevin Warren, as to his credit, brought it up.
Yeah.
Right. How difficult is that going to be to achieve because there is not an entity that represents the players, at least at this hour?
Well, to be very crass about it, I think you just come to a number where you can call it what you will, an appearance fee, whatever, for what would it be, the 1,200 players in the playoffs. That's 100. I'm just using 100 times 12.
Right.
And I've already written this. Let's say you give them $32,000.
Okay.
The math works out with the total I just told you. That's about 2% of what the $1.5 billion. Not a lot, right?
Right.
You could do it. So whatever the number is, here, sign this that you won't sue us, or whatever the language is. I mean, that's how they do it with these conferences. The group of five is getting 22% now under the current deal. Basically, that was the number they settled on, so the group of five wouldn't say, hey, collusion, monopoly,
right,
antitrust. You do the same thing with the players. Just for the playoffs. I mean, there's a separate discussion to be had, you know, overall about compensating players.
Do you feel like you're covering stuff now that maybe, you know, you probably thought you might down the road, but covering stuff now when it comes to stories like that?
Well, I have been for a while. It's just the frequency of it.
Yeah, the frequency. Yeah.
It just rolls. It just comes in waves. Just right now, Steve, the SEC directed Oklahoma to postpone Georgia in 23 and Tennessee in 24 from their non-conference schedule. You know what that tells me?
Right.
That Oklahoma is going to be in the SEC in 23 or 24, maybe as early as next year.
Right.
That's an indicator to me. So I got to make calls on that. What does that look like?
And what does that tell us about the Oklahoma and maybe even Texas ability to somehow get its way, maybe financially, a buyout to get out of the grant of rights?
Well, I think the new Big 12 commissioner, Brett Yormark, has been public about that he would listen or try to facilitate something like that. Then it would just, I don't know what the number is. I have an idea, but I'm not sure what the number is because there's an early exit penalty.
Yeah.
And then there would have to be a negotiated buyout from the grant of rights, because the grant of rights doesn't go away. It goes on for, what's this year, three more years. And so there's no money figure attached to that. You'd have to be let out of that for money. And I would suspect that would be nine figures. Maybe not, but it would go down as time, you know, each year passes. But that would be a discussion to be had as well.
Yeah, I thought Maryland was like $50 million or something like that.
Yeah.
When they got out of the ACC.
And it was fine. They financed it. You remember Rutgers, and I don't know if this is the same thing, Rutgers was grandfathered in to the point where they don't get a full share until 2027.
Well, that's
Rutgers borrowed.
Yes.
Borrowed to the Big Ten,
yep,
against future earnings because they were so upside down.
I have mentioned 2027 with Rutgers finally being fully vested many times on the show along the way.
Somebody got hold of a document. This is big news. The document that it was given to Rutgers, it said by 27, Big Ten teams will be earning $57 million a year. Well, that's out the window, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, the price of poker's gone up just a little bit more since then.
Unreal. We're talking about monopoly money. It's amazing.
Yep.
Dennis, always a pleasure. Love talking about this stuff with you because you know it so well. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
All right, Steve. Thank you.